Chapter 19, New York. On the plane to New York, I sat next to a man in his 70s. His skin was like leather, and his big rough hands bore witness to a long life of physical labor. His hair was white as snow, and he was wearing a checkered shirt. He asked me what I was going to New York for. We had been flying for an hour and a half or so already, and I had noticed that he seemed a little nervous and anxious. I figured he might be afraid of flying, and that talking to him a bit maybe could help. I told him about my trip and that I was excited to see my girlfriend for the first time in 2 months. I asked him about his visit to New York. "I'm going there to visit my son. Haven't seen him in 15 years," he said while staring emptily into the seat in front of him. I could see he had a tear in his eye. There was a lump in my throat, and I didn't really know what to say. There was a silent moment. It was clear that the gentle old man would potentially break down in tears if I dug any deeper into his story. I was eager to hear more about it, but on the other hand, I didn't want to make him sad. I told him how I hadn't seen my own father for 7 years when I was young, and that when I finally gathered the courage to let him back into my life, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I wondered how my own father must have felt when he had been on his way to see me again that day. When we left the plane, we shook hands and I wished him good luck. His grip was firm. "Same to you, my boy," he said as he looked at me with slightly red eyes. It was a strange encounter over time and space, of two very similar destinies and stories going each in their own direction. I was sitting on a bench in the airport, waiting to hear from my girlfriend. We had arranged our flights to arrive at approximately the same time, me coming from Hawaii and her from Denmark. Across from me sat five Swedish women who had just arrived for a week of shopaholic consumer madness. I felt a bit too close to civilization and home, already dreaming myself back to the simple life on small Asian islands. I got off the airport train at station number 5 and there she sat, looking for me with a smile I'd been waiting to see for months. It was nice to see her again. We got in one of those old local trains that was squeaking its way, metallic sounds on the rusty rails, towards the city. It was evening, and the sun was about to set over the thousands of identical dark brown square brick buildings that seemed to make out the most of the Brooklyn area we slowly rolled through. I was, once again, back on the streets of Manhattan. For so many years, it had been my favorite destination for training trips, but for every time I had been there, it had felt less and less exotic to me. The first time I was there, the high-rising skyscrapers and gigantic brick buildings had fascinated me to the point where I just couldn't stop looking up at them. In time, that fascination had faded, and coming back there after having traveled halfway around the world, I was sad to realize that it just felt like another boring cityscape to me. Traveling is much like a drug. The more you get of it, the more you want, but the effect of it becomes less powerful. We were staying with Kyle, a guy who was reading my blog and had offered us a bed for a few nights. He met us on the corner of 1st Avenue and 14th Street, a big guy in a big hoodie sharing an apartment with a few friends. We were both tired from the long flights and equally jet-lagged in each of our own time direction. Kyle had arranged the first training for me, inviting me to come train in a lunch class in his gym, Clockwork Jiu-Jitsu. Lots of people had showed up for an early class like that. I counted at least 40 in the little clean room covered with gray mats. A few guys recognized me from my blog, and I got to talk with two Japanese guys who had trained with Abe-san. The level was really high, and there were more good guys to roll with than I had time for in one class. The instructor, Josh, was a big guy with a grip that was impossible to break. In the nicest way possible, he absolutely crushed me like an ant. A brown belt that was a bit bigger than me was having his way with me. I tried my best to defend, but he was just too tall, strong, and clever for me. The way he skillfully combined the De La Riva guard, sitting guard, and deep half guard constantly caught me with the weight on the wrong foot and left me one step behind him at all times. In between my many taps, he invited me to come join a class he was teaching the next day. I would have loved to, but my schedule in the city was going to be busy and I couldn't promise anything. He pulled himself underneath me in the deep half guard. Hobson, my friend from Sweden at home, is a master of defending the deep half guard with a basic cross choke, and I had experimented with it along the trip with various success. This time, my grip sunk in just right. The guy swept me, but I still hung onto the collar, throwing my one leg over his back so he couldn't pass my guard. He was the type of guy who was going pretty high pace and grunting a bit in the process when rolling, so it took a while before I noticed that the sounds he was making were not because he was struggling to pass my guard. He was out cold. His body was completely limp. I let go of my grip right away, and his head fell forward, hitting the mat. He made a loud snoring sound and was shaking like a chicken that had just had its head cut off. I panicked as I realized that he was out cold, and it seemed like every person on the mat stopped their training to look at me. I felt horrible about it, coming into a gym as a guest the first day and choking out one of the guys there. I lifted his legs and massaged his chest lightly so he woke up again. He was really confused. Last thing he remembered was probably that I was like a grappling dummy to him. I had made a perfect Eddie Bravo versus Hoyler Gracie and pulled a submission completely out of my ass in a match I had no chance of winning. Luckily, he was cool about it, as was everyone else in the room. I was glad it happened in a place with a good bunch of people, and I hoped I wouldn't be pulling off the same stunt in Brazil or somewhere like that. Central Park was calm and nice as always. In Times Square, religious fanatics were standing all over with signs claiming that the world was going to end just a few weeks later. At least I was enjoying my last time on Earth. My girlfriend and I sat for hours on the rooftop of the Rockefeller Building, watching the busy urban sprawl below us. People looked tiny as they walked stressfully along the sidewalks, and the long avenues going through town were painted yellow by the roofs of the many taxis. It was a beautiful view of Manhattan, Brooklyn, and New Jersey from there. The constant sound of the horns from the cars below, the ambient sound of the city breathing, seemed so distant as the sun was on its way down and the sky turned orange. New York was so intense. Being down on the streets, it felt like such a big world, but seeing it from above, it looked small. So many lives of all kinds were lived on that little island. Short, long, sad, happy, rich, and poor lives. They were all there, crammed into a small piece of land. We could see all of it from where we were sitting. I think a place like that is really what you make of it. The impressions you can get there are so many and on such a broad scale that it is completely up to you how you end up seeing it. I guess that is true of any place in the world. Anything, really. Perception is a powerful tool that shouldn't be underestimated in its importance of shaping our lives. If you're about to buy a car, you notice certain cars everywhere on the street that you don't normally pay attention to. If you have set your mind on a new phone, everyone around you suddenly seems to be talking into one. If you pay a lot of money for a meal or a bottle of wine, you will enjoy it more. If someone is wearing a black belt, you pay more attention to them than if it was a white. If you train for a street fight, you might see potential opponents everywhere. And if you believe the world is a bad place, it is. It is up to ourselves to choose which version of the world we want to live in. I am only going to live one life here, so I always choose the positive perception. My mother told me throughout my entire childhood to always smile to the world, and the world would smile back at me. An easily digestible explanation of karma for kids, I guess. I had a busy schedule in New York. Besides all the gyms I wanted to visit, I was also trying to be a tourist with my girlfriend. Looking at my plan of the week, it felt a little bit like training was more of a job than it was fun. I was really happy to see my girlfriend again, and the pressure of having to visit all those gyms in only about a week was a little too much. I had about 10-15 invitations to gyms around the area, but I had to cut it down to only a few in order to have time for everything. Despite having been to New York about 7 times before, I had never succeeded in training at the legendary Hensel Gracie Academy. Partly because it was way too expensive, and partly because I felt so much at home in the Little Ronin Athletics Gym. Now, I had gotten an invitation to train there for free all week, so that was my chance to finally go check it out. I wouldn't mind going there every day for a week, but it just wasn't possible at the time. I got a text from Jeff, the guy who had invited me. The gym was a bit difficult to find. A guy knocked on the window from the inside of an office as I stood a bit confused by the mat and looked around for Jeff. "Did you pay?" I could read his lips saying. I walked into the office and introduced myself. The guy was very friendly. He laughed and told me he thought I was someone who tried to sneak in for free training. He had a guest card waiting in his desk drawer for me and told me I could come by as much as I wanted for the week. It was a sterling offer, and I was bummed that I would probably only have time for that one class. I found Jeff and he showed me around the gym. It was a very impressive place with several floors of mat space. Lots of guys were sitting around on the mats. It was the biggest afternoon class I'd seen in my life. There must have been close to 100 people. No one seemed to talk much. Apparently they came in from many different places, and it didn't seem like a lot of them knew each other very well. Hensel himself was there and said he was envious of my trip as he laughed and firmly grabbed my shoulder. I loved his accent and passionate, powerful voice. John Danaher, the almost mythical BJJ coach, was teaching. I didn't really have a chance to warm up before he started showing a move, and people gathered around him on the mat to try and catch every detail of what he was saying. 4 different techniques were shown with 5 minutes in between practicing, and then he set the timer for sparring. Despite being a very large mat, it was hard to do much on it because it was so crowded. There were a ton of super high-level guys there that I loved to train with, but it was difficult to really enjoy it since we constantly bumped into other people. I asked one of the guys if it was normal to have that many people around for a Friday afternoon class. Apparently it wasn't. Hensel was there to promote one of his students to black belt, and I guess that was why almost 100 people had shown up that day. Hensel himself was doing a Q&A session after the class, and I sat around sucking in every detail I could get out of him. He ended with a little speech and handed his student a crisp new black belt. I wondered when it would be my turn to be in that situation. I had been a brown belt for 1.5 years, and I was in no hurry to get promoted. There were obviously still tons of brown belts around the world who could beat me any day, and I had been thinking about trying my luck with some competitions in the fall when I would be back home. I was sitting on the stairs outside Penn Station, enjoying the sun and my bottle of water after training. A guy on the sidewalk around my age had spotted my AACC t-shirt from Japan and asked with excitement in his voice if I trained jiu-jitsu. He seemed eager to hear everything about my training, how long I had trained, what my belt was, if I'd won any competitions recently, a complete stranger on the street who proved to be a fellow jiu-jitsu geek. He was training in New Jersey. I knew his type immediately. One of those highly enthusiastic young competitors who is eager to train as much as possible, watch instructional videos all day, and suck every single piece of knowledge out of your brain. I liked him, and we had a good chat on the stairs in the sun. I gave him my card with the URL for my blog. If I didn't have such a tight schedule for my last days in New York, I would have asked if I could come and train with him. A guard had spotted us, and apparently sitting on stairs in Manhattan is a crime, so we were told to leave. In fact, it seemed hard to find many places to sit in that town, other than in parks. I missed Paris, where the whole city seemed to be designed to be used and enjoyed by the people. My newest friend had to leave for training, and we agreed to meet up another time for a role. It seemed like jiu-jitsu was all around me. We had moved to a guy's apartment who trained in Ronin Athletics. He had an old blue belt hanging on the door, and a cat with three legs. I was trying to sleep on the couch, but the thoughts of planning were occupying my mind. I couldn't rest because I worried so much about where I should go next. I just wanted to make a schedule so I could lean back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Then, finally, everything fell into place. I had emailed something like 30 people from all around the US and the Caribbean, and suddenly it looked like something of a plan emerged from the chaos. The day after my girlfriend flew back to Denmark, I would take a bus to Washington, D.C. and train with Ryan Hall. Then I would catch another bus to Richmond, where Robert and Amanda were camping with their family, and the next day fly to Orlando and stay with a reader of my blog. One full day there, then onto the British Virgin Islands to visit my old friends on a boat. What would happen after that, I still had no idea about, but at least I had a week or so covered. With the plan set, I could finally just relax and try to enjoy New York, the city I knew too well. When I first got there in 2004, I went to train in Ronin Athletics since it was the affiliation of the Straight Blast Gym organization I was part of. It was a small group of people on shared mats in a strange place where everything from karate guys to military-dressed sambo weirdos and ninjas trained right next to us. I made some really good friends there. Amongst others, Adam, whose microscopic apartment I stayed in for a week, Ryan, who eventually moved to Japan, and Christian, who was running the gym as a blue belt. I felt at home in that gym and returned every year for training. There was something special about sitting, soaked in sweat, on those blue mats after training and listening to the sound of the heavy Manhattan traffic on the streets below. Jiu-jitsu, the little hobby I was doing at home, had taken me somewhere exciting, made me new friends, and I really took a liking to that. The kids I had been teaching in Moldova had refound their interest in training after my visit. Unfortunately, they didn't have many geese or money to do much, but I was determined to help, and so were many of the readers of my blog. Several people had offered to send used geese to them, and a Danish judo gym managed to ship a box of about 50 geese. Robert was back in Bucharest, but eager to make things happen for the kids. We came up with the idea of doing a fundraiser seminar for them, and Christian from Ronin Athletics was happy to host it. They had just moved to a new and bigger location, having expanded the gym 4 times since I got there the first time. The new place was nice, and it was good to see Christian again. I only recognized a few faces on the mat. I guess it was natural that people eventually disappeared over a span of 8 years. A good group of people had showed up for my seminar, and we managed to collect $285. It felt nice to write that to Robert. He was excited about it, and already made plans for setting up a competition in the village and to take some of the kids for a trip to Kishinev. Many of them had never been out of the village, so it would be a big deal for them. There were many options for training in New York. Too many for the few days I was spending there. Marcelo Garcia's Academy was a place I really wanted to go, but the mat fee was $60 and way over my budget for one training session on the trip. I would have to skip it. A guy from Long Island, who had also donated some geese to the kids in Moldova, had invited me to come train with him and Matt Serra. It was my plan to take him up on that offer right until this email popped up on my phone. Hey there, Christian. Bill from BJJ Weekly kindly forwarded us your blog and mentioned that you might be in the city for a few days. Would you be interested in training here with us? I understand that our mat fee is a little out of budget for you, but we'd be happy to waive it. Please stop by. Hope to see you soon. There was no way that I could say no to a free training session in Marcelo's gym. There was only one open training slot left in my schedule for the week, so all other plans were trashed, and I packed my bag for going to visit Marcelo the next day. It was on the 6th floor, and I took the elevator up. A few guys with sports bags were in it together with me, and looked like they were going to the same place as I was. When the door opened, the first thing that hit me was the warm air mixed with the smell of wet geese. Literally one step out of the elevator, and I was on the mats. The guy in the reception recognized me right away and said he had followed my other jiu-jitsu blog for 4 years. He registered me in the computer and showed me to the changing room at the end of the hall. I unpacked my little black backpack on the bench and started to put on my gi. Marcelo came in and noticed he had a guest. He said hi and he shook my hand. He looked at my gi and asked if I knew it was no gi training that evening. I had no idea. In fact, I hadn't even thought about whether it would be gi or no gi training, but just packed my gi when I left. I only had the t-shirt I'd been wearing to get there to train in. If I would have to go home in the subway bare-chested or in my gi top to be able to train with Marcelo, that was what I would do. The gym had moved since last time I visited several years earlier. The new place was clean, spacious, and well lit from the big windows in each end of the matted area. There were lots of room, but it was still very crowded from the many people on the mat for the evening class. I found a corner and stretched a bit before the class started. One of the things I really liked about Marcelo was that he had a clear passion for teaching. I'd been to many places where the instructor would have someone else do the warm-up for him. Marcelo was running the warm-up, and he was participating himself, putting more energy into it than anyone else on the mat. A solidly built guy with a rash guard and big curly hair introduced himself as Josh. He had also followed my trip on the block and told me that he used to backpack around Eastern Europe to play chess. Like with all the other guys I had gone rounds with that evening, he was a really tough role. I had been working on the single-legged X-guard myself for a while, but my knowledge of it was not yet deep enough to be able to see it coming against those who were experts of that game. Josh swept me again and again, and every time he passed my guard and caught me in Marcelo's trademark north-south choke. It was obvious that the guys on the mat were used to having visitors. They all went hard, but there didn't seem to be any ego involved. No one tried to bully the guest. I guess with all the people there coming in every day, it would probably be too much of a task to be that guy. Someone called my name across the mat. I recognized the voice and accent way too well. I had been watching interviews and instructional videos with Marcelo for years and years, studying his game down to every detail. I turned my head around and saw him sitting a few meters away. He was wearing a black, sweaty rash guard, a big smile, and looked straight at me. He asked me if I wanted to roll with him. There were lots of people in the class that day, and I knew that the chance to go around with Marcelo was slim to none, but of course I'd hoped for the opportunity. I almost stumbled over the words like I was trying to answer before someone else jumped in and took my spot. I crawled across the mat to seize my opportunity. He was clearly an expert in adjusting his level to his training partner. Not for a second did it feel like I was in the hands of the best guy in the world. It was like he was racing a moped with a top-tuned motorbike. He was driving side by side just for the social aspect of it and had no reason to go any faster since there was no chance of losing, no matter what. I couldn't threaten him with my moped jitsu, and he allowed me to play a little bit. I felt comfortable rolling with him, and in my excitement, I turned up the pace and went a little harder than I would normally do. I even tried a flying triangle over his guard, but he just brushed it off like it was dust on his shoulder and laughed a bit. As the round ended, he asked me if I did mostly gi or no gi. I told him my interest was 50-50, not the position, but 50% of each. He smiled widely and patted my shoulder. It seemed like I had given him the right answer. I told him I was in town for just a few days more, and he said I was welcome to come join any of his classes. It might have been one of the hardest things in my life to say no to, but my schedule was absolutely packed for the rest of my time in town. I had gone way over my budget and bought expensive tickets to a Broadway show for my girlfriend's birthday the next day. It was impossible to cram in any more training sessions before I was leaving. I had just said no thanks to training with the best guy in the world. I told him I'd be back for my rematch another time. He laughed. I've always seen Marcelo as a very special jiu-jitsu practitioner. Not just because he, pound for pound, probably is the best competitor in the world, but also because of his personality and approach to training and teaching. With the closed-door policies of many teams around the world not allowing their students to train anywhere else in the fear of losing their secret techniques to the enemy, Marcelo has done the exact opposite. Every single one of his training sessions, techniques, and sparring rounds is filmed and put online for anyone to watch. He rolls with any high-level guy who comes to visit in his gym, and that happens daily. His opponents can study every detail of all his moves and tactics, yet no one has found a way to beat him. It proves clearly that it doesn't make any sense not to train with as many different people as possible. I had adapted the same policy at home. Telling people they can't go anywhere else to train is like not competing because you're afraid to lose. You have to challenge yourself both as an athlete and as a teacher. If someone leaves your gym, you know there is a hole in your game as an instructor and you have to fix it. Josh and I were going the same direction when the training session was over and talked a bit while walking down the avenue. He had written a book himself, and we talked about how much work it took. He promised to bring me a copy of it, along with another one about traveling he suggested I should read. My girlfriend was leaving for the airport in an old metallic colored shuttle bus the next day. It was parked by Penn Station with the engine running as we arrived. We hugged for what seemed like an eternity. 2 months until I was back home was suddenly a long time. It was hard to say goodbye, but we were both smiling. One last kiss with a tear in my eye, and she got on the bus. I felt that lump in my throat again that I'd felt in the airport at home when I left her the first day of the trip. From the sidewalk on the other side of the street, I observed her through the windows of the bus. She was wearing headphones and reading some papers, not knowing that I was still looking at her. She looked sad and beautiful. "I'll miss you," I said. She couldn't hear me. Daniel from Taiwan had just arrived in New York on vacation, and I met up with him in a small bar near Central Park. He was still wearing one of my Jiggy Jig caps from Bali that I'd given him. I hadn't had much time to hang out with my old buddy Christian from the Ronin gym, so he tagged along for my last night in New York. It was good fun to talk to two of my good friends I had both met on the road. Christian said, when we talked about how I, on several occasions during the trip, hadn't showered for days, that he didn't know if he could do what I did, if he could cope with being so dirty. Being dirty was one of the least of my concerns while I was on the road. In fact, my entire appearance seemed less and less interesting to worry about. I was wearing nothing but worn-out jiu-jitsu t-shirts I had picked up in gyms along the way, and they'd started to smell a bit. At least I brushed my teeth twice a day, but that was about it. And it wasn't like I was never dirty at home. Like that day when two dogs, independently of each other, were both manically focused on sniffing my crotch on the Copenhagen metro train. Time to wash those jeans.